Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, while my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, takes a little time away from the show, we're bringing in some wonderful guest hosts who, like Matt, are making a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, my guest host today is Britton Devereaux, and she is the Chief Clinical Officer at DeMore Healthcare. Her educational background focused on industrial organizational psychology in her undergraduate work while completing a Master's of Science in addiction counseling, then attaining her licensed advanced drug and alcohol counselor credential, as well as becoming a master addiction counselor. Britton, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Good morning, everyone. And Alan, of course, thank you. And good morning to you. Glad to be with you.
Well, I am so thankful for you to be on here. And one of the things that makes it really nice is that after you were on the show about a month ago, we had additional questions that came into the show. And so what I'd like, before we bring on our guest today, is to share these questions. And so hopefully we have the same listeners that were listening, and they'll get the answers to the things that it apparently allowed them to think more about what it was that you were talking about, and it put them in a position to think maybe there's some additional questions, and hopefully we can help. So this first one reads, it says, I work for a small school district in Northern California, and I'm seeing more and more young people destroying their teen years with illicit drugs. What are some of the industry trends today that are bringing positive results as we try to reverse this?
Well, first of all, thanks again for having me back, and thank you for the question. Definitely a question that I think a lot of parents, families, communities, educators are asking right now. Unfortunately, the trend is that the drug use, the trauma related to drug use and behavioral problems is increasing. So the industry trend is that a lot of us need to rally together and look at these solutions. So to that question, there's several anonymous programs that adolescents can join. There are, of course, increased amount of treatment programs that are looking at not just the substance abuse, but also the behavioral health that goes along with the substance use, so we can look more forensically at the needs that the patient may have. It's definitely important to look at also the pharmaceutical benefits like Vivitrol. There's a lot of medications out there that can block the use of the receptor site for opiates, and Vivitrol is a drug with minimal side effects that a lot of addictionologists and psychiatrists have looked at and said, you know, this is something that can really help keep adolescents safer. And there's definitely a value in evaluating the family therapy, counseling needs, not just individual, but also among the family system. So as we look at addiction and mental health disorders, lots of times there's trauma, biological, trauma environmental, socially, mentally, emotionally, legally, and to look at some of these needs in a safe therapeutic setting where individuals can hold space for those needs and that trauma is very beneficial. So counseling, that is an increased trend that individuals are trying it. The only thing I would say, and I would caution our listeners, is don't just go once. Don't just go twice. You have to keep going back, because finding a good counselor, a good therapist, or a good treatment is something that requires perseverance, persistence, and determination.
Wow, I love that. And especially when you were sort of focusing more on the mental side or the psychological side, because so many times people will think, okay, if there's drugs involved, that just taking those away is somehow going to fix everything, like some sort of magic thing. And I'm so glad that you touched on the aspect of, if you don't then go for the root cause, because in many cases, I mean, the drugs can just be a secondary issue.
Agree. And at D'Amore Healthcare, one of the things that we in some ways joke about, but in many ways we communicate this to our patients and to their families, is we hope we never see you again except as an alumni when you come back to eat dinner with us, because we don't want to see somebody cycle through treatment over and over again. We want this to be the last time and then to go live a fulfilling, high quality life.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up that point, and I feel the same way. And I spoke one time in Washington, D.C. to a large amount of psychologists and psychiatrists, and I started the speech with, put me out of business. Mm. You know, put me out of business. Put me in a position to where I don't have to locate the runaways because they're not running away. Put me out of business so that I don't have to transport them to your treatment center because they don't need it.
So. Amen 1,000 times, Alan. Amen 1,000 times.
So, okay, and we have another question that came in. This one reads, it says, my daughter is 7.5 years old and is refusing mental health treatment for her bipolar disorder. I feel as though I have a very limited amount of time to get help for her. What are some short-term decisions or therapies I can get her into that would make the best long-term impact?
I love the question. Because short-term decisions, when it comes to behavioral health, absolutely have a long-term impact if they're sustained, if we're consistent with those short-term decisions. And that's what we talk about, whether it's at D'Amore or in anonymous communities or Celebrate Recovery. We talk about this idea that we repeat the same thing over and over to learn our own gracious redundancy unto ourselves and then unto others, this self-compassion. Short-term decisions would look like therapy, would look like counseling, but it would look like inviting a hobby into your daughter's life. So she's 17 and she's probably got a lot of questions about life. She's got a lot of questions about who she is and where she's going. Does she matter? What's her purpose? And what I would say is if she's looking at this through a lens of a mental health disorder, there's going to be distortions. There's going to be irrational beliefs. There's going to be a loss of self-worth and definitely a low sense of self-efficacy. What a hobby can do is work between biology, the social community, spirituality, and one's emotional status to help build up their purpose and practice living life. And the trauma of everyday life is something that we all face, but definitely a 17-year-old with bipolar disorder is facing that trauma. She deserves compassion and the consistency of investing in a hobby. I would invite yourself to that hobby with her as regularly as you can, and then give her space to independently practice that hobby. And definitely, again, I want to go back to counseling. It's something that we can't emphasize enough. We live in a culture of fast and more. And in a culture of fast and more, it's difficult to find anything that has real value or meaning. And in counseling or therapy settings, we find value, one, for ourselves, and then therefore for our relationships. We learn about respect of self and respect of others, and we learn how to communicate that in those meaningful interpersonal relationships. She's just barely scratched the surface of that at 17, especially with a lens of a mental health disorder. So a short-term decision would look like making an appointment with her and giving her options around who she sees, who she continues to see, giving her options around a hobby. And then, of course, spending time with her social community. So she needs that time, and evaluating that social community for safety and for risk. So it's easy for us to say, so glad you're with friends today, but definitely ask more questions and show engagement, because what she'll remember in the years to come is that you asked questions, that you were involved, and she'll remember that you took that time. And that's really what you're looking at. Those short-term decisions will make a big difference over time.
Wow, thank you. Such wise advice. And thank you for sending in the question. And I appreciate, even when it's after the show, In most cases, we would get that question and forward it directly to Britton or whoever the guest was at that time. In this case, because I knew Britton was coming back on, I thought it was such a powerful question that it made more sense to have the answer that goes out to everybody rather than just contacting the one person and answering it for them. So thank you for that. Now, our topic today, and I know that as a kid, one of the things that I enjoyed was going to the zoo. I thought that that was one of the best things that we could do, and as a kid, going there and seeing the animals, and especially the more exotic ones, was something that we really look forward to. Well, our topic today is more than just a visit to the zoo. It's a wildlife rescue sanctuaries that present excellent children's educational programs. Now, our guest today is Bobbi Brink, and she is the founder, director, and vice president of Lions, Tigers, and Bears, and has been working with and advocating for the captive big cats, bears, and other exotic animals since the early 1990s. Now, Bobbi began her personal involvement with these efforts after witnessing the abuses and neglect inflicted upon captive animals that are victimized by the exotic animal trade. Since then, she has made it her personal mission to work to end the abuses to these beautiful animals. Now, Bobbi plays an active role in managing all aspects of Lions, Tigers, and Bears' daily operations, from daily feedings to office management. She is a prolific fundraiser and tireless advocate for abused and displaced wildlife. She works across the country to coordinate the rescue and relocation of hundreds of big cats, bears, and exotic animals, providing them an opportunity to live out their lives at reputable sanctuaries, including, of course, Lions, Tigers, and Bears. Bobbi has testified before Congress to help instill legislation that would regulate the trade of these animals. She is also very active in local planning groups, and both she and Lions, Tigers, and Bears have won multiple awards and have had recognition for leadership and public service from the Alpine Chamber of Commerce, the San Diego County Board of Supervisors, and the California State Assembly. Bobbi, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me and letting me speak on behalf of the animals.
Well, we are just thankful that you are out there speaking on behalf of them. And I was very thankful when in speaking to my producer, Jan, that she got in touch with you and started providing us with the information and what it is you're doing, and we couldn't wait to get you on. So it's definitely our pleasure.
Thank you.
So I guess to start with, I mean, share a little bit about what Lion, Tigers, and Bears is and maybe what it isn't.
You know, most people don't know the exotic animal trade second to drugs and weapons and right behind human trafficking in our country. There's just some terrible people that don't care about animals and use them for nothing more than profit. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, the animals live at the zoo or they live at the circuses. And there's thousands of big cats, you know, and bears in our country that are just that deplorable roadside zoos and, you know, little faulty attractions and canned hunt ranches. And so I started Lions, Tigers, and Bears to try to make a difference for the animals. And we started in 2003. We started by bringing in a bobcat and two tigers. Now we have rescued at our place right now, we have 65 animals, 17 different species. We work all over the country with first responders to get animals out of deplorable conditions and places where they shouldn't be. We help go in on raids and compensate animals and everything else. And then, of course, we're an education center, and we even work with special needs children because animals are just great therapy.
Bobbi, I was so intrigued as I started to look at your Instagram and your website and really get familiar with Lions, Tigers, and Bears. And one of the things that struck me is that it's not only a safe haven, not only is it a sanctuary, but you provide comfort for these exotic animals that have been abused and abandoned. Tell us a little bit about what that comfort looks like and how you're unique in the way that you provide for these animals.
Well, we like to say they go from rags to riches. So we take some of these animals from some of the most disgusting places you can imagine and bring them to Lions, Tigers, and Bears, where they have space, you know, and room to move around. And a lot of times for the bears and the tigers, it could be their first time on dirt or their first time to look up at the sky or even the sky without a cage above them. Or like for a tiger and a bear who loves to go in the water every day, it could be their first time to, you know, put their whole body in water. You know, a lot of times when we go pick up these animals, people put them in their kitchens or basements and they never think about getting them out. And we've literally got to go in with the first responders and build something to get them out, because sometimes it's not safe to dart. You know, the cage could come apart that they're in or something like that, and then we'll bring them home. And a lot of times they're afraid of space, so we just have to give a lot of TLC, a lot of medical attention. Sometimes they've never seen a vet, or a lot of times with the big cats and bears, they need dental work. They've never seen a dentist. And we're just super patient until they get used to space and lots of TLC, and then they finally get to live like a lion and tiger should live, or bear, the best that we can do by having them in captivity.
Bobby,
so our big cats, we have them set up where they can rotate, so they're not even in the same habitats every day, and then they get to smell each other's smells and there's new things, and they don't get bored. But we can't rescue all the animals, so there needs to be change. And so in that breath, we work on legislation and being their voice. And this is where you can help by writing letters to your constituents when we need help and things like that, in hope that we get change.
And Bobby, what you're describing sounds so much like what we do in healthcare, in the sense that we have to establish trust first with the patient in order to actually see the patient experience healing and recovery and change and be able to reach their goals. And a goal for a lion is not that much different than a goal that you and I may have. And when I think about the different details of what you're sharing with us, my interest is in how do you see them change as they're developing trust with you and with your coworkers?
You just got to be really patient, and it takes time. Like, for instance, we had a bear named Sugar Bear, and he lived in a corn crib for over 6 years, which isn't even 10 feet circle. So when we were working on the rescue, there was 30 animals on the property, and we moved him last because he was coming back with us, and he was in the front of the hauler that we brought across the country, which is like a 6x6 cage for him to come across the country. And he was happy as could be back there. Open up the door and we would feed him, and you know, he had no stress. And we brought him home and we put him in a small quarantine cage, because every animal has to go through quarantine, like a 15x12, and he did fine. But then when we took him, when it was time after all of his medical testing to take him out to the 3-acre habitat, and we put him in a bedroom, a small bedroom, because they all each have their own individual bedroom, he was fine. But when we opened the door to the bedroom, and it was like the door to freedom, he was scared to death to step out. Mm. He would look out, but then he would come back and start pacing. So you just got to be really patient. Open the door an hour a day, bump it up where you open the door 2 hours a day till you work up to the doors open 24 hours. And then as the doors open 24 hours, one day we just worked out and he's sticking his foot out and touching the dirt. So first time he's ever touched dirt. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, he's sitting outside like a little kid playing in the sand next to the sandbox, but getting up every few minutes and making sure his little safety is there and he can still go back in his bedroom. And then now he walks the whole, you know, the whole habitat, roams around with the girls, uses the pool, the picnic table, everything that a bear should do. Just takes time and patience.
And, you know, Bobby, I love the fact there is such this interaction between humans and animals. And I know that also in working with at-risk youth, that's one of the things that has had an incredible amount of success, be it with horses or with dogs or a variety of different animals. I know a program up in Utah that uses llamas. You know, so there's so many different ways in which our young people, by interacting with animals in their habitat, is so beneficial to psychologically to us. So I love the fact that you have the animals there, that you bring at-risk youth or developmentally disabled youth or anybody up there to be able to see them in their own habitat. I think that it's probably bringing as much value to them as it is the animals themselves.
Oh, it sure does. We've had so many kids, like even troubled teens that come out and they don't talk, and they're here because they have to be. But by the end of their month, they're smiling and you know, they have a purpose, and it's pretty interesting to watch. And we've had, you know, some kids that are blind, and it's amazing. They can't see the animals, but they can tell they're there, and it's just this form of communication, and it works. It's the animals are much smarter than us, I always feel, and they have a way of talking to us without a voice if you have the time to listen.
And share a little bit about the difference between prey animals and how they relate to humans versus animals that are known more as predators.
Right, and this is a problem, you know, with the lions, tigers, and bears. You know, it's tiger, top of the food chain, apex predator. These animals can kill you in a second. So this is why they don't make it pets, and they don't belong in somebody's basement or kitchen. And, you know, 99.9% of the time, private ownership, it just doesn't work out. So it's just hard because, you know, these animals, they have to be kept in a habitat, you know, and it has to be safe. But yet people need to be able to interact with them and work with them daily because they're captive animals. All they know is our people. And this is the reason that they can't be put back in the wild. They'll walk right up to a person. So you can't have a tiger just walking right up to a person. But it's amazing, you know, like my pastor says, to have tigers, you have to have faith in chain link. And just having that piece of chain link between you and the animal, there's so much good that can still go on that you can do for that animal, and vice versa, that animal actually does for people in return.
And it's interesting as you say that, because the faith that it takes to interact with these animals after they've been through such trauma, it must be something that you engage on a daily basis. Tell us a little bit about that.
We just got to, you know, be patient, and, you know, even the keepers, we have to kind of get to know each animal, know their daily routines, you know, just kind of like your kids. You get to know their habits, and you can tell when they're up to no good, and you can tell when they're up to good. And, you know, animals, you can tell when they don't feel good, and you know, how they feel, because they're just like us. One day they might feel good, and the next day they might not feel good. Their eyes tell so much, and their body positions, and even our body positions, and they watch our movements and our habits and how we smell every day and things like that. There's a lot to be learned.
Now, when you talk about, you know, obviously these are predator animals, and I know that I've read some kind of negative information in regards to these kind of cub petting zoos, or it's sort of a cub petting industry. I know, having traveled in other countries, it was amazing to me that there would be situations in which people would be waiting in line to go get their picture taken with a particular cub. And I mean, I looked at it and I thought, you know, I still know that is a predator animal. So share a little bit about you know, what it is that's going on in that industry and what you don't like about it.
Well, this is a really sad thing, because it has just gotten to the point where we have to make it where nobody touches the babies. And it's just because, you know, the unresponsible people that don't care anything about the animals, they are continuously breeding more and more animals for nothing more than to use them to do photo ops as their babies and dispose of them when they're too old for the public to touch. So in our country, the federal law is, with that, from the time the animal's 8 weeks old to 12 weeks old, that's when it's legal to have your photo taken with a cub. So for them to run their business, they have to continuously have babies and continuously have babies so you can hold, touch, and have your picture taken. There is not one legitimate organization in our country that does the photo ops. So please don't do it, because, you know, these places will have signs up to say it's conservation. The only reason they're letting you touch the baby, they're rescuing it or to save a species. Please be careful, because a lot of times these cubs are disappearing. We don't know where they go, or they're just thrown into a small cage and they just live out their life in misery.
Well, I think you just answered my next question, which I was going to say. So if they're only allowed to have pictures with them until 12 weeks, what happens to them after that?
So 4 weeks of their life, it's legal, and a tiger will live 20 years. A bear can live over 30 years. They just disappear. We don't know where they go. They just end up in a small cage with other animals, or they become a breeder. You know, as I can't tell you how many facilities I've been in where there's 10 by 10s is what they'll keep the tigers or lions in to breed. Nothing more than to pull the babies before their eyes are even all the way open. The mama comes back into heat and the baby goes out to do photo ops. It's not what a tiger or lion was meant to be.
No, not at
it's
all.
It's just cruel. It's just cruel.
Now we know that yours is an accredited sanctuary. What is the difference between an accredited sanctuary and a non-accredited sanctuary?
So even if you're on vacation and you're, you know, driving around and you see a roadside zoo, please check and see if they're accredited before you even frequent that place. You can, it's so easy to do. There's two bodies that accredit. It's Global Federal Association of Sanctuaries and American Sanctuary Association. And if you forget, you can always call us or look on our website. But what being accredited does is it's like a peer review. And they just go through your financials, your safety records, your training, you know, how you take care of your animals, so many things to keep you on the right track and keep you doing the right thing. And the most important thing to remember is a real sanctuary will never buy, breed, sell, or trade, ever. They just don't do those things. A zoo is different. Like for instance, our San Diego Zoo is an AZA facility. Not to be confused with ZAA or AZAZ, but it's an AZA facility. And you can always remember that by just look up San Diego Zoo and see how they're accredited. And then you can remember across the country. But that organization, AZA, is the only one to hold the species survival plan. So if you do see breeding, and if you believe that breeding lions, tigers, and bears that can't go back out in the wild, that we're just breeding to be in captivity is okay, then that is who does the legitimate breeding. So they're the ones that hold the SSP plan, the Species Survival Plan, have the book, do it properly, move the animals around to increase the gene field. And then it's going to come to where, like, our teenagers right now and our young people are going to make the decision. Do we continue to breed lions, tigers, and bears to have them in cages and on public display? Or do we stop unless we can actually do true conservation where these animals get to go back in out in the wild?
So, Bobby,
because that's what conservation is.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, thinking about zoos and circuses, this may be the provocative question, but what is appropriate? You said AZA is appropriate. So we're thinking about animals in captivity. That gives them no opportunity to live out their normal animal life. So what is appropriate? And forgive me if that's an ignorant question, because I know you're so well versed in all of this.
Well, to me, that's not appropriate. But I think other people feel differently. Mm. So if there is one legitimate breeding source in your mind, then it would be the AZA Zoo.
Hmm.
To me, I just don't really believe in continuing to breed more and more animals if they can't go out and live their natural life. And when I first started working around these animals in 1990, just being the animal lover that I am, seeing them in a cage, it really didn't bother me at first. And I just would do anything on this God's green earth to work around the animals. But now that I've actually done what I've done and I work around these animals every day, I see it more and more and more. They don't belong in a cage. It's just, it's not what God built them to be. They belong out in the wild, being a tiger in the forest, in the rivers, and, you know, a lion out on the savannah. They don't belong locked up in a glamorized prison. So that's why I just truly believe the younger generation right now is who's going to make that decision and do the right thing and stop all the unnecessary breeding and get it illegal to have these animals as a pet in your backyard. And we're working on our federal law. We're on our fourth try. It's called the Big Cat and Public Safety Act, and we're trying to get that through. And that would kind of stop pet ownership and unnecessary breeding and make the permit requirements a little bit stronger.
Now, for those of you out there that if you would like to learn more about this, you can go to the website, which is lionstigersandbears.org. You can go to the website. You can not only learn more about it, but if you go there now, we're going to take a break. There are some wonderful pictures on the site, you know, so you can, again, open up another window. Obviously, if you're driving, don't try this. But if there's any more information that you want to get even after the show, it's lionstigersandbears.org. You'll be able to get a wealth of information. If you can't write that down, we will have all of that information on our site at answersforthefamily.com. So stay with us. We will be right back.
founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking about lions, tigers, and bears.
Bobby, tell us a little bit about what listeners can do to help lions, tigers, and bears, and animals not living at LTB. I saw a little bit about your event in October, so tell us more.
Well, there's so many things. You know, definitely donations. We completely survive on donations. That's what helps us to not only support our animals, but go across the country and help more. And medical supplies and veterinary care and things like that can volunteer. And even if you're not in our area, our volunteer coordinator can get with you. There's things you can do from home that you can do in your community. Even, you know, as far as posting flyers, social media, get on our Facebook and like us. That helps. Share. If we send something out, sharing helps us, especially when it comes to, you know, anything to do with some legislation that we're working on or when we're having an event, because, of course, the events help us to raise money for the animals. And we have all different kinds of things at our property to raise, you know, to raise funds, from people getting married to having their birthday party to staying the night in our retreat to our spooky campover, which is tent camping where you can come out in October and stay the night. It's good fun family, you know, good fun family time. And we do like a pumpkin carving contest at night where everyone brings a pumpkin and then we stuff it full of goodies and give it to the animals in the morning, and a costume contest, singing, fire, s'mores. It's just a fun tent camp over. Every year in December, we have a Christmas party. It's always the first Saturday of December, and it's a fundraiser for the animals where we give them Christmas trees and gifts. In May, we have our gala. And then, you know, just coming out for a visit. We do 6 scheduled visits a week, so it keeps it peaceful the rest of the week for the animals. But we do those scheduled appointments Wednesday through Saturday. There's so many ways you can help. And then get on our email list. So we email. We promise not to email more than once a week. And a lot of times it's just a cute video of an animal doing something or an update. But then we send out important things when we need your help to write a letter or make a phone call, or, you know, if we have an animal that's sick and we need help, we do, of course, ask for help with that. So there's so many ways. If you really want to help, call in, email in, and we'll put you right to work.
Thanks, Bobby.
No doubt.
Absolutely. Sounds like there's a lot of ways that we can help. And I was on your Instagram at lions_tigers_and_bears, and I saw some really cute posts. And one of the first things that came to my mind is, this has got to be extremely expensive to maintain the cost of this facility. I know you have the retreat and you have events that we can participate in, but can you give us an idea of what an average day, what the cost is, or can you give us any way to conceptualize how we can take that next step to help you guys?
This is another perfect example why these animals don't make great pets. They are so expensive. So for us, one tiger in a year will eat $10,000 worth of food. So it's about $10,000 for one tiger, and that's just food. And about our operating costs are about $75,000 to $80,000 a month to support our animals, and of course, you know, our keepers, because they have to have a keeper. And it's just, you know, it's expensive. So we're constantly raising funds and, you know, asking for donations, and it just works one animal at a time. And every little bit adds up to make this work.
Absolutely. Your calculation there of $10,000 a year, It sounds a little bit like those of us that live in the LA area with our costs of living, right? When you think about how much it costs to feed us on our American diet. So we definitely have opportunities to help you guys.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, our two most expensive bills, and people always think food, but it's actually electricity and insurance. So electricity, they had all of their pools have to be pumped and cleaned, and the refrigeration and food rotated, and, you know, the just it's just the little things that you don't think that they add up.
Well, the October trip sounds like fun. I think we may have to come up there and join you for some pumpkin carving.
That'd be fun.
You know, we also got some listener questions that were sent in ahead of time, and again,
sure.
I always thank those that send these in. Oftentimes, they will say that they're working in the middle of the day and they're unable to listen live, and the only way they get their question asked is to send it in ahead of time. So again, we really appreciate them taking the time to do this. Now, this first question reads, it says, the vast majority of children today have their heads buried in cell phones and video games, and they are growing up with no or little connection to nature. Can you tell me where you think we are headed in protecting our wildlife and wilderness habitats if our younger generations just do not seem to know or care about it? And this is from Ben in Washington.
Well, I agree with that, but I have so many students and so many young kids right now that they really truly are interested in nature and they are interested in animals. So if I was a parent, maybe taking the kids to see, you know, and take, you know, do your homework and find the place in your area that is a legitimate sanctuary. And if they're interested, they'll get involved. But we have many students and many young people that, you know, are even going to, you know, work in conservation for their career, or a large animal vet or a ranger. And, you know, I don't believe that they're not interested. I believe we need to get them interested and share and then thrive on their interests.
You know, are there enough classes, in other words, you know, from the standpoint of college, I mean, are there college classes that people are taking? I mean, I can remember there was a time in which people in school were saying, well, you know, I'm going to become a park ranger, you know, or I'm going to work with animals more than just pets like a vet would, but, you know, to work with them. Is there a specialty, or are there schools out there, and are they maintaining enough classes that's providing enough people out there to handle this?
I believe there are. And, you know, even afterwards, there's plenty of places to do, like what we do, the internships and the hands-on. And, you know, we do both high school and college level volunteer and interns for students.
That's great.
So I believe if they're interested, there is.
All right. We have,
you know, even Moore Park College has a lottery to, you know, and it's very, it's still very hard to get in for the exotic animal care program up there.
All right. We have another listener question that's come in, and I think this touches a little bit on what you've talked about people having animals in their neighborhoods. This one reads, I have a farm in western Nevada where we raise llamas. We recently found out one of our neighbors was in possession of a tiger. I went online and was shocked to learn that one of the largest populations of tigers exists not in the wild, but in captivity in the United States. Now, not confident that our neighbor has a clue what he is doing, we contacted the local authorities only to learn that Nevada was one of six states where it was not against the law to own a large cat like this. Should we be concerned, and are there many instances of these cats escaping and harming people or animals on a local ranch like ours? And this is from John in western Nevada.
So yes, everything he said about Nevada is true. It is one of the states where you can legally still own the animals as a pet. And as far as escape, you know, they can't escape, of course, but I don't think it's super, super risky. I don't know the situation. I don't know how the neighbors cat is housed, and, you know, in order to answer that, you'd have to see that. So, but yeah, there are more animals living in backyards than you know, there are in the wild. There's more animals in the state of Texas than there are in the wild. There's more tigers in the state of Texas than there are in the wild, and there's more tigers in Florida than anywhere in the country.
I mean,
in the world. So I, that kind of tells you.
Now, I would have never guessed that, but what is the reason that there are more there? And I'm almost afraid to say, is it because they are doing some of those organized hunts?
Yes, and the photo opportunities and roadside attraction. You know, Texas is very, was, you know, that's where I got involved in the exotics, and I was actually opening up a restaurant. And I was, you know, in the classified ads looking for restaurant equipment, and I kept seeing these ads, and I'm from San Diego, and the ads would say lions, tigers, leopards for sale. And I'm like, whoa, how did that happen? And so I went and checked it out, and sure, lady lived on 5 acres. She had 30 big cats, all breeders, and she had lions, leopards, and cougars crawling around her floor. Leopards, you could take them home today. $800, you know, whatever. So cheaper than a good red dog, knowing nothing, you could walk in and buy one and take it home. This was 1990. So that's how it happened. And then you could just be right down the street from you, and you wouldn't even know it unless you hear the lion. Because the lion's voice will carry.
Mm-hmm. As you describe the propensity of adults to have these pets for themselves, it reminds me of that Animal Planet feature of a lion named Christian. Have you seen that, Bobby?
Yeah, and I wish they wouldn't keep playing that over and over, because, you know, it is kind of a lion trait to put their arms around you, but it's so dangerous.
So dangerous. And the idea that animal remembered those adults so well, so many years down the road. It is interesting, but it definitely is a provocative look at our treatment of animals. Definitely thought-provoking.
You know, these animals, they do show passion and love, and, you know, they obviously have feelings, but, you know, they're built to kill. That's what they're made for. So you've just got to be trained to train the animals. Per se, you've got to, you know, the people that do it, it's a full-time thing. It's not like they go to work and come, you know, and hang out with their lion for a minute. It's a lot of work to be a trainer. There are some very good animal trainers, but just like any job with a risk, it's a risk. And you see, like, a lot of people, I think they just do a spur of the moment decision, because who could resist a baby tiger? And they take it home, and they don't really think about, oh my gosh, it's going to be 8 months eating, you know, 8 pounds a day, and then it's going to start eating more, and, you know, it's going to cost me $50,000 to build a proper cage. And they don't really think about that till it's too late, and the animal's 80, 100 pounds, and it's going to gain 400 more pounds, and then they start getting scared. That's usually about the time we start getting the calls.
And just to look even more closely at what you do, what does the average day for Bobby look like? You wear a lot of hats.
Yeah, and it could be different every day. So I'm an early riser. I'm usually up 4 to 5:30, and I work till dark. And I just focus one animal at a time and try to prioritize. And, you know, my day could be anything from out digging a trench to put in a pipe to feeding tigers to talking to you on the radio, or, you know, working with my staff to fundraise and organize the walk-in freezer, just whatever it takes to get this job done. I don't ask my volunteers or my staff to do any job that I haven't done myself. And I work side by side. And if we're moving animals across the country, I'm the night driver, and I don't leave the animals once we have them in the hauler. I sleep in the truck and, you know, shower at the truck stop or hotel real quick, and we're right back on the road back and forth across the country to get the animals delivered.
That's certainly dedication. Now, for those people that are planning their vacation and they think this is a great thing and they wanted to come to the Pacific Ocean, they wanted to come out to the West Coast anyway, how can people set up a visit to Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine?
They can either call the office Tuesdays through Saturdays or just get right online on our website, www.lionstigersandbears.org, and you can book a visit right online. Super simple. And we would love to meet you and love to, you know, share the animals and our passion and our mission with you.
Now, we have another question, another listener question, and this one ties right into that concept of coming and visiting. This one reads, as a kindergarten teacher near San Diego, California, I would love to bring my class to visit at Lions, Tigers, and Bears. How would I go about setting up a school-sanctioned visit on your end, and what would a coordinated visit of children this age consist of?
So Lauren is our person who books those, again, Tuesday through Saturday, so they could just call the office. And we just put together about a two to two and a half hour, so you have their attention span. And we do it as a group, and we actually have a little scavenger hunt for kids. And so one of the keepers takes them around and introduce them to each animal, and then they have a little game and coloring thing that they can do while we're doing the visit, and they get a sticker at the end if they complete it or not. They get the sticker, but it just keeps them engaged. And we, you know, like we feed the bears peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and we feed the big cats meat, and so, and then the keeper will play off the kids' interests and things like that.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Now, I had one more thought and I had lost it. Now, if the kids are coming, I mean, obviously, you know, there's a time in which you're sitting down with them. Is there like a little training thing to where it's explained to them why they're not going to have contact with the animals, why this isn't a petting zoo, but yet it is one that they can see them in something closer to their own habitat?
Before they set off to see the animals, we have a little video we show, and then the keepers talk to them for about, 3 to 5 minutes, and then they set off to see the animals. So they do the best they can, depending on what age the kids are, to explain why we do what we do and why they're, why the animals are here and et cetera, et cetera.
So, Bobby, first of all, I just want to thank you, and really acknowledge you for all of the great things that you're doing. And I wish that we had more time. If there was one message that you wanted to get out to everybody and have it resonate, what would that be?
Please don't do the cub petting. There's nothing more that we all want to do than touch and kiss and love on a baby tiger. But, just try to picture the end result for that tiger isn't good. And just try to think of the animal and do the best thing for, that particular animal by not giving them your money. And same thing, I go on the cruise ships and go in the theater and talk to people. Please don't get off the cruise ships and do the cub petting, because it's even worse in other countries what happens to the cubs. So that would probably be my thing. And, frequent the accredited sanctuaries and accredited zoos if you're going to go to a zoo. And thank you so much for letting me talk to you about the animals.
Bobby, earlier when I asked you about building trust with the animals, I just want to acknowledge the passion that I heard in your voice. You sounded like you were smiling as you described that interaction with the animals to us. And I know that what you do is something that in many ways goes unseen, and we just want to acknowledge you today and say thank you. And we believe that there is a way to change this, and we would love to continue to talk about your efforts and do what we can to participate in that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and the animals, thank you.
And again, for everybody out there, the website is lionstigersandbears.org. Check it out. And again, if you can't write that down right now, you can go to the Answers for the Family site. We will have all of Bobby's information on there and a link that you can get right to them. Now, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Ian Roberts, author of The Wonders of Language, or How to Make Noise and Influence People. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or Vimeo. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and it will be greatly appreciated. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. Be good human beings, have a wonderful week, and join us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.